You got into the safety business because you wanted to protect people. But somewhere along the way, the job started controlling your time, your schedule, your priorities, even your income potential. What if the expertise you've built over the years in the field can give you something more? More freedom, more control, more ownership of your future. I'm Sheldon Primus, the author of 7 Steps to Starting a Profitable Safety Consulting Business and the host of the Safety Consultant Podcast, with more than 350 episodes helping safety professionals become consultants and grow their career. Consulting changed my life. In fact, I'm a full-time RVer and one consulting contract paid for my home I live in today. Now, I help safety professionals build their own consulting practice through bi-weekly coaching calls, accountability, and personal guidance. But this program isn't for everyone. Start with the consultant readiness audit at sheldon.coach.
What if everything we thought we knew about safety was just interference? From the host of the Rated R Safety Show and the founder of Safety FM comes the complete Signal Transmission Trilogy, now available in one powerful edition. Safety, in my opinion, the book that started the conversation. Safety Mutation, where the boundaries of culture, systems, and belief begin to break. And now, Safety Transmission, the final piece of the Signal. For the first time, all 3 books are together in one volume. The Signal Transmission Trilogy, complete edition. This isn't just about compliance. It's about consciousness. It's about decoding the way we think, lead, and live, inside and outside the system. Whether you've been following the Signal since the beginning or you're just now tuning in, this is the version to own. Search Signal Trilogy on Amazon or visit safetyfm.com to get your copy now.
Hey there, it's Safety Words for Thursday, February 26th, 2026. I can't believe it's 33 years today from the first World Trade Center bombing. Right, in 1993, we're going to be doing a special coverage of that because there's a lot of people out there, I'm finding out, who don't remember that. And there's a lot of our listeners out there, especially the younger ones. I'm getting a lot of our listeners are under 18, which is mind-blowing. I go places in town and everything, hey, Safety Wars, hey, you know, and it's coming from the younger crowd there. So there is hope. There's always hope here. And, I mean, we could call this Safety Wars, a new hope, right? That's to rob some other stuff. Then we're going to mosey on over to some chemical safety board reports, specifically on the, let me make sure we got it, the Pemex Deer Park Refinery in Deer Park, Texas. We're going to be going in a little bit with that with hydrogen sulfide. They had a hydrogen sulfide issue there. They came out with the final report, the Chemical Safety Board. So we're going to review some of that, and we'll see where it goes from there. So let's get this whole thing on, get this whole thing going here.
Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
Hello, hello, hello. It seems like we're already getting out of the deep freeze out here. Long-term forecast, 10 days. We're going to be here in the Northeast. It's going to be like the mid-70s. Not this weekend, but the next weekend. And we're supposed to get some rainfall here with melting. Well, it's going to be melting snow here, which means ice dams in front of the sewers. I remember when, 1996, when we had that huge, or was it 93? Winter of 92 into 93, right? I always get confused. Is it a winter of 93 when it starts in 92? Summer, I don't know. But anyway, when we had 17 ice storms in like 20 days, something ridiculous in New Jersey. And when all this stuff started to melt and we got those spring rains, all of the sewers were clogged with ice. And of course, who was the one? Because I am who I am. I went out there, nice, buff, strong, right? Guy out there with a pick and cleared out all the ice dams on blocks, saving everybody's homes and basements from being flooded. But as they say, no good deed goes unpunished, and that's a story for another day. How's everybody doing out there? We went to, when was it, Tuesday night, we did the State of the Union show with that, whatever you want to call it, the address. We have some feedback on it. Some people loved it. Some people hated it. We did not put it on Safety FM. We put it on our other platforms, like one at Rumble. We put it on Facebook. JCB Technical Services or Safety Wars over on Facebook. We put it on YouTube, things of that nature with that. We will be doing that more often on that because there's... no, I'm a political animal here. What can I say? Now, I had forgotten about this until this morning. I knew it was in 1993 in February, but I thought it already passed. And it came across my feed the 33rd anniversary or commemoration, whatever you want to call this, of the 1993 World Trade Center bombing. And what we found out today in talking to people who weren't alive back then, most of the people I work with on my projects were either children or were not even alive. And I remember when I was on the projects and I was the younger guy. I was the youngest one. And then all of a sudden I wasn't the youngest one anymore. And we ended up, talking about, well, what happened and everything else. And things have come out over the years. And one of the comments that was always made when I was in graduate school was, yeah, we graduate, this is NJIT in Newark, New Jersey, we graduate the best terrorists in the world, right? Here, they were successful. Now, they wanted to topple the World Trade Center at that time, right? No, topple it over, one building into the other. It didn't work, and then we all remember what happened, and now it's 26 years, going the 26th anniversary on the 9/11 attacks, which... completed the job, more or less, the first time. Wanted to also point out with that 9/11 is back in the news because there's been some murmurings with the new administration in New York City, Mayor Mamdani, to why were the decisions made what they were made with that. And there was some other news that got by me in November on the same situation, why were things done on the way that they were. And I will point this out. A friend of the program here, his father, Jeff Olcott, he had spoken to Christine Todd Whitman. And I know two other certified industrial hygienists that said this air is not safe down here, blah, 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 blah. And they went ignored with everything. And so, and no, it caused a lot, no. Psychological problems for a lot of these people, PTSD, that they were ignored. Similar thing happened here with COVID, right? This is one of the reasons why we're here broadcasting. And by the way, we have announcements next week. One of the reasons why we're here broadcasting is because of COVID. Not a lot of people went into podcasting, and it only lasted, like Jay Allen says, and I don't think I'm saying anything that he hasn't already said, right? Most people do like 12 to 24 episodes and they realize, oh crap, this is a real job. And unless you really love it, like me, right, this is a lifelong dream come true doing this. Now this is actual work, and people fade out and don't do it anymore. One of the reasons why we have this here is that we communicate stuff nobody else does. We have a platform where we, where else are you going to find information on stuff like we're talking about tonight that's available to the average person? And with COVID, we knew, Jimmy Fosel, Safety Wars, before there was even a Safety Wars, that the Centers for Disease Control was not capable for, not because they're bad people, not because they're evil people. There are people out there saying they're evil. Believe me. There's enough of that. They weren't equipped to handle a situation like that, and I based that on my experience with the anthrax cleanups, and I've never gone into huge detail, and the people who are involved in that don't want to go into detail. I ran into an emergency manager over the weekend from that I knew from the news at a event I went to, and she was telling me all about what went on 9/11. She doesn't want to go on the record with it. So we knew that they weren't prepared for any of this stuff. Nobody wants to go on the record with it. And I'm sorry. Maybe it's me, my ego, call it whatever you want. It bothers me that for years I was saying to people who are in power in this country, we're not prepared for a pandemic, publicizing it. I had the American Environmentalist newsletter going around all over for years. Not prepared. We got to prepare. Blah, 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 blah. Oh, you're full of guvno. And then disaster after disaster after disaster happens. And again, so, oh, well, maybe you know a little bit. Well, what's the solution? To be prepared. And this is how you have to do it. Increase capacity, resilience, increase your ability to learn. Blah, blah, blah. Well, the government should be handling that. And then you end up with problems here. So well, I'm on a rant as usual, but what's my point? We have to keep the memory of this stuff alive. Not for paranoia reasons, not to sell something or anything else, that this kind of stuff happens. Right? If we were going to say, well, there's millions of people in the American workforce, only 5,000 people die a year, who cares? And, well, 55,000 people, according to the statistical models that everybody agrees on, oh, well, you know, who cares? I mean, what kind of thinking is that? These problems of 9/11, whether it's in 2001, 1993, or even the stuff that's going on today with a lot of the political violence here, that's stuff we got to remember. That's stuff that we have to prepare for. That's stuff we have to manage. That's stuff with the people on the other side of the aisle with you, you got to reach out, right? You got to reach out and you got to make peace. You have to reconcile. You have to make consideration. You have to negotiate. You got to live with your neighbor here. Everything else, where you can, you make up. Get along. That's all part of the safety war here, right? We're fighting for our safety, but guess what? Part of that is leadership. Part of that is getting along with people. And with that, I'm just going to go and start with the FBI report, their FBI website, and we'll just narrate that and show it to you online. So here we go with that.
Safety Wars is streaming now.
SafetyFM.com.
Is your safety training old, stale, and hackneyed? Is your safety trainer still preaching a warped version of behavior-based safety? How about safety training that is designed to actually address and assess your hazards and liabilities and is not standardized baloney from generations ago? Contact the Safety Wars team at SafetyWars.com or call me, Jim Polzel, at 845-269-5772. Remember, if you are receiving this message, you are the solution to unsafe workplaces. OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Polzel with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy!
From the front lines of the safety war, it's Safety Wars, with your host, Jim Polzel on Safety FM. Get ready to face the harsh reality.
So I remember when this happened. I was working over in at the Bayway Refinery in Linton, New Jersey, 1993, and this actually happened. I was at a Bayway Refinery. I was around that neighborhood, and we noticed on our way back to the job site, we were doing a mobile sampling out there. On our way back to the office, we noticed smoke and everything coming over there in the vicinity of from the other side of the river. I make it home, and my father is like, holy, you know, remember, no cell phones. My father is like, wow, look at what's going on over there. And this is one of the pictures. This is from the FBI.gov. So again, government website. Oh, I got to yell at you. You're using government websites. Yeah, we're using government websites. They're not copyrighted. This is a brief history of this. So this is the cleanup there in the parking garage, I believe. This is where it was. On February 26, 1993, at about 17 minutes past noon, a thunderous explosion rocked Lower Manhattan. The epicenter was the parking garage beneath the World Trade Center, where a massive eruption carved out a nearly 100-foot crater several stories deep and several more high. Six people were killed almost instantly. Smoke and flames began filling the wound and streaming upward into the building. Those who weren't trapped were soon pouring out of the building, many panic-stricken and covered in soot. More than 1,000 people were hurt in some way, some badly, with crushed limbs. Middle Eastern terrorism had arrived on American soil with a bang. A small band of terrorists scurried away from the scene unnoticed. The FBI and its partners and the New York Joint Terrorism Task Force began staffing up a command center and preparing to send in a team to investigate. Their instincts told them that this was terrorism. They've been tracking Islamic fundamentalists in the city for months, and they later learned were tantalizingly close to encountering the planners of this attack, but hunches were enough. What was needed was definitive proof. They'd have it soon enough. The massive investigation that followed, led by a task force with some 700 FBI agents worldwide ultimately joining in, quickly uncovered a key bit of evidence. In the rubble, investigators uncovered a vehicle identification number on a piece of wreckage that seemed suspiciously obliterated. I'm going to point this out. There were subsequent interviews of some of the people who were saying stuff that they weren't supposed to, that were investigators. One of them was that, based on what, my recollection of hearing these interviews over the last 33 years, was this was the primary bomb that went off, right, with this, the primary attack, and they had planned on having another attack once the investigators went in there, another one happening. The investigators, the rescuers, and then killing a whole bunch of other people on this. So the second one did not go off with this, is what my understanding is. A search of our crime records returned the match with a number belonging to a rented van reported stolen the day before the attack. An Islamic fundamentalist named Mohammed Salema had rented the vehicle, we learned, on March 4th. And on March 4th, an FBI SWAT team arrested him as he tried in vain to get his $400 deposit back. One clue led to another, and soon we had in custody three more suspects, Nidal Ayad, Mohammed Al-Abuhalima, and Ahmed Ajaj. We also found that the apartment where the bomb was built and storage locker containing dangerous chemicals, including enough cyanide gas to wipe out a town. All four men were tried, convicted, and sentenced to life imprisonment. Shockwave from the attack continued to reverberate. Following the unfolding connection, the task force soon uncovered a second terrorist plot to bomb a series of New York landmarks simultaneously, including the UN building, the Holland and Lincoln tunnels, and the Federal Plaza, where our office in New York is housed. the FBI office, that is. On June 24th, 1994, hold on here. On June 4th, 1994, FBI agents stormed a warehouse in Queens and caught several members of a terrorist cell in the act of assembling bombs. Meanwhile, the mastermind of the World Trade Center bombing was still on the run and up to no good. We learned his name, Ramzi Youssef, within weeks after the attack, and discovery was planning more attacks, including a simultaneous bombing of a dozen U.S. international flights. Youssef was captured in Pakistan in February 1995, returned to America, and convicted along with the van driver, Ayad Ismail. A seventh plotter, Abdul Yassin, remains at large. I did not realize that. Here, I did not do the share screen here. We later learned from Youssef that his Trade Center plot was far more sinister. He wanted the bomb to topple one tower over with the collapsing debris knocking down the second. The attack turned out to be something of a deadly dress rehearsal for 9/11 with the help of Youssef's uncle, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. Al-Qaeda would later return to realize Youssef's nightmarish vision. And here is the wanted poster for Abdul Yassin. With that, I mean, we do have worldwide reach here. This is him in 2002. I don't know what the status is. I don't believe the FBI has updated this information in some time. And Ramzi Youssef, that was his wanted poster. He was already captured with that. Now, with that. So, let's do this. So here we have the six victims, and they were, if you go to 9/11, the museum, they're in the memorial, they have memorial set up for them here from 1993, because the original memorial was destroyed in the 9/11 attacks with this. And this is from 911memorial.org. So here you go. This is a letter from several years ago with this, from last year, from the 25th anniversary. As we come to remember the events of that day, we also recommit ourselves to condemning the hatred and misunderstanding that led to them. 19 years ago, a group of terrorists detonated explosives in an abandoned van in a public parking garage beneath the North Tower of the World Trade Center. The brutal attack killed six innocent people. We remember them: John D. Giovanni, Robert Kirkpatrick, Stephen Knapp, William Mako, Wilfredo Mercado, Monica Rodriguez-Smith, who was pregnant when she was killed. Their names are now forever inscribed in bronze on a 9/11 memorial on panel N73. Among the thousands of names of those killed on 9/11, they remind us that these events are inextricably linked and of our sacred obligation to never forget those who were killed. Please join me in remembering John, Robert, Stephen, William, Wilfredo, and Monica, sending our heartfelt condolences to their families. This is from Joe Daniels, president and CEO of the 9/11 Memorial. And here is, apparently this is an old page, and we're getting dead links on here with this. It's, you know, I don't know what to say on this with this, other than we need to remember these things. We need to remember the victims. We need to remember everything. And we're going to go right now, and we will, what we normally do for our outro, we will do right now with them and have a moment of silence for them. And also we play our national anthem in their honor.
You are listening to Safety Wars.
Tomorrow's safety today.
At Safety FM, we're just a humble radio station and podcast network. But we're changing the way people look at safety, one broadcast and one podcast at a time. Because here, we don't treat the word safety as a dirty word. We make it powerful. Rated R Safety Show. Jay Allen pushes boundaries and breaks myths. Safety Wars. Jim Posel brings the battle for safety to life. Pre-accident investigations. Todd Conklin dives deep into human performance. The Safety Consultant Podcast. Sheldon Primus helps you build your business and your career. A Hope Podcast with no name. Andy Barker and Matt Florio keep it real with human and organizational performance. The Accidental Safety Pro. Jill James explores what it means to grow in this profession. The Safety of Work. Dr. Drew Ray and Dr. David Proven bring you science, research, and real-world impact. Hop into action. Ben Hutchinson gets you moving from theory to practice. Truck Safe Live. Brandon Wiseman delivers compliance and safety for America's road warriors. The Safety Pro Podcast. Blaine J. Hoffman blends leadership and innovation for today's workforce. Whether you're on the job, on the road, or on a mission to make work safer, there's a voice for you at Safety FM. Safety FM, changing the way people look at safety, one broadcast at a time. Visit safetyfm.com or download the Safety FM app wherever you get your podcasts.
Steel-toe boots by the job site gate. This is Safety Warrior, safety professionals, I should say. Get off your knees. That's what our whole theme for 2026 is. Right? Get off your knees. Have some backbone. Grow some. Proverbially, because we do know that there's a lot of females out there doing this, thank God. And keep us in line with this. Keep things clean. We were not hired to beg, we were hired to lead. Lead that job site, lead that work area. Lead that company. That's us. Get off your knees. Jim, why aren't you singing? Well, I can sing. Jay Allen did record me singing karaoke, so I can sing here with that. I have that video somewhere. We're going to talk about the hydrogen sulfide release at the Pemex Deer Park refinery. The Chemical Safety Board recently issued this report on this month, and there's another report also on another facility. And what were some of the things? This was the investigation report, and we're going to run through the normal CSV type things on here with this. So Deer Park, Texas, incident date was October 10th, 2024. They got this out pretty quickly, this report here. Safety issues, positive equipment identification, work permitting and hazard control, turnaround contractor management, and conduct of operations. Here, that's what they were involved in. Now, I'm going to say this, all right, with this. And this is a little bit of a disclaimer. And this pissed off a lot of people at Rutgers when I was, when we were there a couple years ago doing a class. You got to be very careful with the with any of these government reports. Because, again, they do a really good job, Chemical Safety Board. I'm not impugning them. But they have to look at all points of view. At least they're supposed to look at all points of view and everything, come up with some type of a narrative on what actually happened on these things. Sometimes people testify, and it's either they're not credible, it doesn't fit the narrative of the other facts, and everything else, and that may or may not be actually what happened. Now, we can understand that now with the Epstein files. Well, why are you bringing those up? A lot of people, a lot of information there. Some of it true, some of it not true, some of it hearsay, some of it pure fabrication, some of it an exaggeration, some of it this, some of it that, with that. So we don't really know. And real quick story, there were a couple of videos a video that somebody was going to show at a huge safety training at the one of my projects. We had over three, it was for a shutdown at a refinery. There were 300 or 400 people in the room. And I said to guy's name was Mike. I said, Mike, dude, you don't want to show that video. Because even though that's a good video from the CSB, I've heard that that stuff in that video is not necessarily true, according to some points of views to some people that I've spoken to who allegedly were there. And he's, oh, we're going to do it anyway. We're going to do it. Ah, what are you talking about, Jimmy? We planned this out, blah, 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 blah. I said, well, you should have included me on it, number one, because we're here. I'm an experienced person. You didn't want to, you wanted this to be your baby. And no, the bully factor got into this. He shows the video. And what do you think happens? The foreman from that project, from where the accident happened, got up and said, I can't, quote unquote, I can't believe that you people are showing that video here. Right? He says, this happened on, we'll just say the East Coast, make it very general. And most of the people here aren't your traveling crews that go around to refineries and power plants and the like on the East Coast. You know that somebody was going to, knows something about this. And he said, what's on that video, right? The facts of how the person, people passed away, facts. We can't get around that, right? The events leading up to it and how it was immediately managed, all whitewashed. And he went off and blah, blah, blah. And it was like a horrible thing. So what I learned was this. If you're going to show a CSV video in a safety training class, or share these things. If the accident happened on the East Coast, only show it if you're doing training in Middle America and on the West Coast. And if the accident happened on the West Coast, only show that video on the East Coast. Right? This way you minimize the likelihood of that happening to you. And that's all I'm going to say on that, with that. So let's get back to here. We go down here, and what is the Chemical Safety Board? The CSB is an independent federal agency charged with investigating, determining, and reporting to the public in writing the facts, conditions, and circumstances, and the cause or probable cause of any accidental chemical release resulting in a fatality, serious injury, or substantial property damage. The CSB issues safety recommendations, right? So they are issued like OSHA's with enforcement, they're about recommendations, and it's a very small organization relatively in the federal government, and not too many people have heard of them, and there was a proposal to get to do away with them, but they give really important information, and of course, we're all here about information and being proponents where we can. Now, the CSB was created under the Clean Air Act Amendments of 1990, and the CSB was first funded and commenced operations in 1988. It took 8 years. Wow. The CSB is not an enforcement or regulatory body. No part of the conclusion, this is important, no part of the conclusions, findings, or recommendations of the board relating to any accidental release or investigation thereof shall be admitted as evidence or used in any action or suit for damages arising out of any matter mentioned in such report. With that, this accident, the October 10, 2024 fatal hydrogen sulfide release at the Pemex Deer Park refinery fatally injured two people. Jason Scott and Jose Perez Jr. And with this, let me check the time here so I know how long this is going to take. Okay, good. And if it makes sense, we're just going to conclude and put on some other programming with this, right? On October 10th, and this is the executive summary, on October 10th, 2024, approximately 27,000 pounds of toxic hydrogen sulfide gas released during a maintenance activity at the refinery. Release fatally injured two contract workers and injured several others. The release occurred when contract workers from Refcon Incorporated opened piping containing hydrogen sulfide gas. Now, I'm going to point this out to you, that a lot of the piping in, I'm not familiar with this operation, but I am familiar with a lot of refinery stuff. A lot of the byproducts of the refining process for crude oil is hydrogen sulfide. And hydrogen sulfide in some of the process piping is in excess of 90% concentration on that. So you got to know that, and you got to be aware that this is like a serious thing when you're doing this in a refinery or a chemical plant. Instead of opening a pipe flange on empty piping, the workers mistakenly open an identical piping segment 5 feet away, releasing pressurized hydrogen sulfide gas and fatally injuring one of the Refcon workers. The released hydrogen sulfide traveled downwind to the adjacent unit, where a worker from ISC Constructors, who was unaware of the release, inhaled the toxic hydrogen sulfide and was fatally injured. The release continued for nearly an hour until PEMEX Deer Park emergency responders reassembled the leaking flange and stopping the release. 13 additional contract workers were transported to nearby medical facilities to be evaluated for hydrogen sulfide exposure. In addition to the fatalities and injuries, shelter-in-place orders were issued by officials in neighboring cities of Deer Park and Pasadena that remained in effect for several hours due to the release. While the facility was not physically damaged, property damage of $12.3 million associated with the incident resulting from the loss of use in the amine unit, and downstream processes. Now, they had identified four areas here. Positive equipment identification. PEMEX Deer Park did not establish an adequate method to clearly identify the equipment that Refcon workers were to open before the work was authorized to begin. PEMEX Deer Park's procedures required operators to prepare a drawing and a list of piping flanges to open, but the piping flanges could not be identified using these documents alone. To aid the contractors, operators hung identification tags to indicate each flange that Refcon was to open. The tag for the intended flange was placed in a location that Refcon workers did not see, on a platform-ended flange. Due to the lack of a reliable method to identify the intended equipment, the Refcon workers searched for unlocked flange locking devices, which they commonly observed elsewhere in the refinery. Accidental releases resulting from opening the wrong equipment occur regularly in the chemical processing and refining industries. At the time of this report, that's February 2026, there are no industry standards. Let's repeat this. There are no industry standards for positive equipment identification that apply to chemical processing or refining. Other industries, including healthcare facilities, have established standards and best practices for marking, which have been shown to reduce the number of incidents. An industry standard applying to chemical processing and refining could reduce future incidents from opening the wrong equipment. Positive equipment identification. Here they have a little thing. Let's go back. Right, we might get into this here. Right, work permitting and hazard control. I was involved in a fatality investigation many, many, many years ago, that where things were not labeled and things were not the permitting process was fouled up, where the normal permit issuer was absent that day, and somebody else was writing work permits. And let me back up here. When you're working at a chemical plant, pharmaceutical, medical processing, anything, they a lot of times, most facilities have a permit system. And it's essentially a checklist, usually. Now, modern stuff, they will include an AHA or a JHA, JSA, depending on whatever your facility calls them. If AHA is Army Corps. I've written a lot of them lately. Right, so that's in there. And it also says that everything has been evaluated and now you're allowed to work. And the permit issuer is supposed to know all that's going on in there, preferably, or at least what you're doing and what the dangers are and how it impacts everything else. They developed this because of situations like this where people open the wrong thing. And the other thing is that they don't want to impact certain operations where you're working on this pipe. It's a dead pipe. It's been drained. It's been isolated. It's been locked out and tagged out, de-energized and everything else. Well, guess what? That doesn't impact us. Well, that pipe over there, which in this case, approximately 5 foot away, according to the report, now that's, right, you knock that one out, that shuts everything down, what have you. PMEX, Deer Park's work permitting processes was poor and did not control the hazards associated with open piping in an operational unit. On the day of the incident, PMEX Deer Park issued REFCON a broad scope work permit. That's often a problem in these situations where you have a broad scope work permit on there, right? Not specific, that covered different jobs with different hazards without clear, unambiguous hold points, meaning a hold point is more or less the term I'm familiar with. These are the critical steps. Then you do go up to this and you stop. That's a hold point. You go up to this and this is critical that you do this. As a result, the REFCON workers overlooked a written instruction in the permit to stop work and have a PMEX Deer Park operator join them before opening hydrogen sulfide piping. This is also called many times a first break procedure. So that's not in the report. I'm giving commentary here, right? A first break. So oftentimes when you're doing a first break, there are other procedures that are involved. Increased PPE, a first break. Some facilities have a first break hood, right, which is similar to level A or level B. Maybe the first break has to be done in level B, meaning supplied air respirator, and what have you, depending on what the procedure is for that. And don't assume, ask. Have the backbone with that, right? Safety professionals, get off your knees. Furthermore, the work permit did not evaluate or control the hazards of pipe opening activities directly upwind of a unit or many other contract workers performing scheduled maintenance activities. Well, what does that mean? That means that you have what is called a barrier limit with these things, meaning that you're going to have based on this activity, based on this amount of material, based on a whole other bunch of factors, we're going to have an exclusion zone of X number of feet around this activity, right? Or we're going to have an increased PPE situation. But let's remember, in an increased PPE situation, the hazard's still there. You're still dealing with that hazard with that, right? Turnaround contractor management, right? On the day of the incident, REFCON workers were reassigned from working on a shutdown, isolated and emptied unit undergoing scheduled maintenance called a turnaround to working on the partially operational unit where the incident occurred. So what does that mean? Let's take that apart, right? Reassigned from working on shutdown. That means that you're working, again, this gives you a little bit of, it shouldn't, but it normally gives the workers a little bit of comfort where they're going to not appreciate the risks, because during a shutdown, during a turnaround, right, scheduled maintenance, a lot of stuff gets shut down. You may shut down an entire unit with this, where the all of the piping into that unit is shut, drained, everything else, everything on the other end, everything is locked down, tagged down, and everything's neutral, energy neutral, right? That's a good buzzword here. And when you go into an operating unit, now a lot of the times the workers, if you're not communicated, if you do not have that little huddle there, you may not appreciate that you're going to an operating unit where this stuff's working there. Maybe that one pipe has to do with the work in the other unit with the shutdown, but none of the other piping does. Right. That I wasn't there, but this is what I am gathering based on what I'm seeing here. Due to the abrupt shift in the work environment and proximity of the two units, the workers were not aware that they were working in a different unit or that the unit was operational and contained toxic hydrogen sulfide, what I just said. Although Pemex Deer Park had provided onboarding information to the RUFCON workers about the precautions for working in the shutdown turnaround unit, Pemex Deer Park did not inform the RUFCON workers about the hazards associated with working in the operational unit before assigning them the flange opening task. As a result, the RUFCON workers did not follow usual precautions associated with working around live equipment with that. Now, part of the process safety management standard, PSM, is that you're supposed to do site orientations, you're supposed to communicate hazards, and it says a lot of things, but that's how this applies here. The conduct of operations. Right. The CSB identified numerous instances where Pemex Deer Park policies and procedures were not aligned with actual practices. So this is the work as done versus the work as planned, number one, and also what a friend of this program he mentored me in a lot of this stuff, right? You have policy and you have practice. In other words, work as planned, work that's done, you have policy. This is what the policy is, but this is what the reality is when we do the work and how we manage the hazards. In many cases, Pemex Deer Park's written documentation was consistent with industry guidance and accepted best practices. However, both management and operations personnel often misunderstood or were unaware of these expectations and frequently deviated from required practices. As a result, Deer Park deviated from documented work permitting and hazard evaluation requirements, which contributed to the incident. The CSB determined that the cause of the incident was opening of incorrect equipment, which released pressurized hydrogen sulfide. Pemex Deer Park did not establish an effective method to clearly identify the correct equipment to open before authorizing opening of the equipment. Contributing to the severity of the incident was Pemex Deer Park's failure to adequately evaluate the hazard posed by opening the equipment with an active unit that was adjacent to a unit undergoing a turnaround where many contractors were exposed to the hydrogen sulfide release. Additionally, Pemex Deer Park deviated from several of their own policies and procedures that could have prevented the incident. And here's the recommendations here. And this is to Pemex Deer Park. They have the recommendations labeled here, right? 2024-05 ITXR1. I don't know what their labeling convention is, but again, this is a good, if you're a safety person, it's extremely important that you listen to this program because we often go through these things, but you have information, you have ammunition. Just like with the article we read last night, I said, look, this article here, you should be highlighting in this because these are the things, the phraseology here. Of course, make it into your own phrases. This is a phraseology that you could be using in training and communicating and instructing people and everything else with that. So, for example, I didn't have time to put it together today. Today's Rated R Safety Show, the monologue, which is roughly about 29 minutes after the hour to about 35 minutes after the hour, explains our thing, legalized safety. I don't know if there's a better explanation to it. Did Jay specifically mean that? I don't think mean to explain what we're doing here. Not necessarily there, but it fits perfectly. We'll have that for you on our next show. Develop procedures to ensure that any craft workers, right? So label, now you, when people say, well, what do we do with labeling? And you there now, right? What standard do we use? Here, ANSI ASME A13.1 Scheme for the Identification of Piping Systems. Develop procedures, recommendation two. Develop procedures to ensure that, and I would say develop and practice, right? Procedures to ensure that any craft workers introduced to or removed from a unit in positive isolation status receive instructions that define the hazards, the safeguards, and requirements of the unit associated with the work. The procedure should require each craft worker to receive clear communication of the identified hazards, control measures, and all other requirements before commencing work in a new area. And the next recommendation, establish a conduct of operation system that establishes and enforces behavioral and performance metrics in accordance with CCPS's conduct of operations and operational discipline. Again, that's another publication that you want to look into here, right? Conduct of operations and operational discipline. This system should include the management commitment to process safety, B, employee input. This is all in process safety management here with this. Most of this is from what I recall. Methods to ensure that policies and procedures can be effectively followed to include, at a minimum, permitting, equipment marking, and energy isolation procedures. Regular audits, D, to regular audits to verify adherence to conduct of operations metrics to include, at a minimum, performance expectations, training, management visibility, leadership by example. I tell you what, you give us a call, 845-269-5772, drop us a SMS on there, text message. We can do that training for you. We can do leadership training. We have a whole program here, a whole presentation here. We've given it a couple of times on this show. And worker knowledge and awareness. So it's not enough to have a worker sign off on a piece of paper saying, yes, I know. Maybe you want to give a, perhaps you want to give a test. More than a verbal. Now, give a test on this stuff here with this, right? Okay. Develop, and the next one, develop written guidelines for marking equipment for opening. The guidelines should define a standard practice for equipment marking that includes clear identifiers of the area to be opened and means to remove the markings at the conclusion of work. Here, some other stuff in the report. Here we have a picture of the facility. The history, the refinery was constructed by Shell in 1929. In 1993, Shell formed a joint venture with Deer Park Refining, a limited partnership, to share ownership of the refinery. Deer Park is an indirect subsidiary of Petróleos Mexicanos, Pemex, a petroleum company headquartered in Mexico City, Mexico, that is wholly owned by the federal government of Mexico. Now, I think that this needs some further investigation here with this, because we have a foreign company owning an American facility. Did the culture of that foreign company, of that foreign culture, impact that? Now, impact something like this. Now, you say, well, Jim, that doesn't sound very nice. That has happened on a couple of job sites around where people had one expectation from their cultural background that they brought to work. You know, you bring the work things, right? I have from the Prussian and Polish educational system and upbringing to my situation, and it's noticeable often. Not so much anymore, but again, culture. What is the culture of the facility of that, with that? Do the people managing the facility, making the decisions, do they appreciate American laws and American standards? That's the question. I don't know. God willing, they do. And this was just one of those things that happened with accident causation theories and everything that goes into it with this. That's what it is. Pemex owns 7 refineries, 6 in Mexico, and the Pemex Deer Park refinery in the United States. The Pemex Deer Park refinery employs 1,000 personnel and 1,200 contract workers during normal operations. United Steelworkers Union represents Pemex Deer Park hourly maintenance operation employees. The day of the incident, there were 1,729 contractors and personnel from other companies, as well as 252 Deer Park employees. A little bit about hydrogen sulfide here. Really, the hazards here. Right? Hydrogen sulfide is generated from sulfur that naturally exists in crude oil during the refining process. Hydrogen sulfide is colorless, highly toxic gas that causes damage to the eyes and respiratory system. Exposures to concentrations as low as 100 parts per million is considered, which is not a lot, guys, is considered immediately dangerous to life and health. Concentrations over 1,000 parts per million can cause nearly instant death. Hydrogen sulfide is heavier than air and tends to travel near the ground during a release. Now, what does this mean? What can we gather from this? And we're going to be ending the program here. So hydrogen sulfide, normally in a refining situation, you have to wear a hydrogen sulfide monitor. And that alarms at a very low rate, usually 10 parts per million. It alarms. So you have a 10 safety margin of 10 when these things go off. Now, some people have different things, you know, levels and everything else that they set it at. But what's important to know is that it is a olfactory inhibitor where it directly deadens the sense of smell here. So you may be exposed to it at low levels and you smell it and it's like, I smell that. And it smells like rotten eggs. And if you look under the definition of rotten eggs, it's going to tell you it smells like hydrogen sulfide. It's just swamp gas, often it's called. And there was a similar situation in Texas that we reported on earlier this week. That had a similar situation. And you don't smell it after a while here. And I forget exactly what the odor thresholds are. But also, this is also flammable. And like I said, a lot of these processed pipings have concentrations of over 900,000 parts per million in them, or 90% concentration here. So again, a little bit of this gets released, like in this situation, you're going to get, this is going to be the end results. So that's what I have tonight. We are going to see you. I don't know if I'll be on the air this weekend or not. If I do, it's probably going to be on Rumble or YouTube discussing politics. You're trying to keep away from politics here, and you're going to get a warning at the beginning of the program if we're going to have political content on there, because some people don't want to hear that. I don't know why. I find it very interesting, but a lot of people don't want to hear that. For Safety Wars and the Safety FM Network, this is Jim Polzel. We'll see you next time.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.
steel-toe boots by the job site gate. Clipboard heavy with a way to fade. Just sign it, don't slow us down. Don't make waves, don't shut it down. But I've seen the blood on the ground. I've read the names on the reports when they were passed around. A hard hat crack tells the truth, no lie. Somebody rushed, somebody waved it by. They call us overhead, call us a cost, but they never count what a life would have cost. Safety professionals, get off your knees. We weren't hired to beg, we were hired to lead. No more rubber stamps, no silent pleas. This job was built on accountability. Stand up straight, say what you see. Safety professionals, get off your knees. Morning brief in a half-lit shack with a rolling in, no turning back. Foreman says we'll figure it out. I say that plan's got holes, no doubt. I don't answer to shortcuts or production lies. I answer to families and closed casket cries. From OSHA regulations to hard-earned scars, the same paperwork, it's who we are. We don't work for comfort, we work for the truth, and the truth don't bend for a deadline due. Well, safety professionals, get off your knees. We weren't hired to beg, we were hired to lead. No more rubber stamps, no silent pleas. This job was built on accountability. Stand up straight, say what you see. Safety professionals, anti-work, this ain't anti-crew. It's pro everybody going home like they're supposed to do. I've walked the sides, I've run the calls, I've heard the quiet after the sirens fall. So if they say you're being difficult, I'll wear that badge like a hard-won belt. From the trailer park to the boardroom seat, same message echoes down every street. Compliance without courage is just theater play, but leadership means standing in the way. So cue the mic, turn the volume high. This is Safety Wars, no alibis. Safety professionals, get off your knees. We weren't hired to beg, we were hired to lead. No more rubber stamps, no silent pleas. This job was built on accountability. Stand up straight, say what you see. Safety professionals, get off your knees. Yeah, this ain't a favor, this ain't a fight. It's a line in the sand for doing it right. So boots on the ground, eyes open wide. Safety Wars, stand up, don't slide.
You got into the safety business because you wanted to protect people. But somewhere along the way, the job started controlling your time, your schedule, your priorities, even your income potential. What if the expertise you've built over the years in the field can give you something more? More freedom, more control, more ownership of your future. I'm Sheldon Primus, the author of 7 Steps to Starting a Profitable Safety Consulting Business and the host of the Safety Consultant Podcast. With more than 350 episodes helping safety professionals become consultants and grow their career. Consulting changed my life. In fact, I'm a full-time RVer and one consulting contract paid for my home I live in today. Now, I help safety professionals build their own consulting practice through bi-weekly coaching calls, accountability, and personal guidance. But this program isn't for everyone. Start with the consultant readiness audit at sheldon.coach.
What if everything we thought we knew about safety was just interference? From the host of the Rated R Safety Show and the founder of Safety FM comes the complete Signal Transmission Trilogy, now available in one powerful edition. Safety, in my opinion, The book that started the conversation, Safety Mutation, where the boundaries of culture, systems, and belief begin to break. And now, Safety Transmission, the final piece of the signal. For the first time, all three books are together in one volume. The Signal Transmission Trilogy, complete edition. This isn't just about compliance. It's about consciousness. It's about decoding the way we think, lead, and live inside and outside the system. Whether you've been following the signal since the beginning or you're just now tuning in, this is the version to own. Search Signal Trilogy on Amazon or visit safetyfm.com to get your copy now.